Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael. I'm reading the San Angelo Standard Times newspaper for the week of Sunday, January 16th, 2022. I'll begin with most recent articles. COVID-19 update, a look at San Angelo coronavirus data for January 2022. Tom Green County, as of January 20th, City of San Angelo. 37,191 positive cases reported. 565 new positive tests. Deaths, 492, 313 from Tom Green County, and 179 from other counties. 75 currently hospitalized. 8,613 active cases. Tom Green County COVID-19 Vaccine Tracker by Diane Panitalio. Tom Green County has administered more than 132,536 doses of the COVID-19 vaccine as of January 18th, according to data from the Texas Department of State Health Services. That's up very slightly by 0.51% from the previous week's tally of 131,865 COVID-19 doses administered. In Tom Green County, 47% of people living in Tom Green County are fully vaccinated as of January 18th. Vitalant encourages San Angelo residents to help with national blood shortage by Jay Moreno, published January 19th. The recent spike in COVID-19 cases has made a national shortage of blood donations even worse. Vitalant, a nonprofit blood services provider, is encouraging San Angelo residents to help out by making an appointment to give blood. It is absolutely impacting our ability to collect blood that's needed by patients in the hospital, said Vitalant donor recruitment supervisor Linda Grace, referring to the pandemic's effect on blood donations. It was already bad before Omicron hit, but now it's very difficult. Mobile blood drives are being canceled due to increased COVID-19 cases, Grace said, including a blood drive at a high school nearly 3 hours away in Kermit. The drive was ultimately called off due to several students and faculty members testing positive for the virus. Besides COVID-19, the flu and colds have also contributed to the blood shortage, as well as a lack of blood being donated during the holiday season, Grace said. Appointments can be made at Vitalant's San Angelo location, formerly the United Blood Services building, at 2020 West Beauregard Avenue. Donations can be made during their regular operation hours at 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday to Wednesday, noon to 7 p.m. Thursday, and 7:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. Friday. There will also be a blood drive at Sunset Mall in the community room next to Conn's on Saturday, January 22nd from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Those who donate blood at the mall will receive Chick-fil-A coupons. Donors at both locations must feel well on the day of their donation, as there is no waiting period. All those who donate blood through Vitalant during January will be entered into a $5,000 big game giveaway, where winners can win prepaid gift cards of that amount by mail. Now is the time to step up to help, Grace said. The only place that blood can come from if you or somebody you know or love is in the hospital is from you, the volunteer blood donor. For more information or to make an appointment, call 877-258-4825 or visit www.vitalant.org. Those who wish to donate at Sunset Mall can use the blood drive code Sunset Mall when making an appointment. Mertzen man arrested after child makes outcry of sexual assault, by Rosanna Frere, published January 19th. A child made an outcry recently to school administration at a San Angelo school of sexual abuse that occurred for over 2 years in Mertzen. The child, younger than 14, went to the school official's office and said they had been touched over and under their clothes for approximately 2.5 years. The victim said the last incident happened on November 15, 2021 in Irion County. Raymond Acosta Jr., 55, was booked into Tom Green County Jail on January 15th for aggravated sexual assault of a child, sexual assault of a child, and indecency with a child by sexual conduct. Acosta remains in jail in lieu of a $200,000 bond. We asked 10 questions to these San Angelo City Council candidates. Here's what they said. The Standard Times sent a questionnaire to all four candidates running in a special election for single-member District 5 on the San Angelo City Council. Voters living in SMD 5, which includes areas of Santa Rita and College Hills, will decide who will represent them Saturday, January 29th. The four candidates seeking office include two women and two men. Some have been involved in local politics for years. Others are political newcomers. The winner will serve an unexpired term until May 2023. The candidates were given 10 questions and asked to keep their responses brief and limited to 4 to 5 sentences. Some responses have been edited for clarity and length. Their answers are listed below in the order their names will appear on the January 29th ballot. What do you think is the top issue facing people living in single-member District 5? Karen Hesse Smith. It's the responsibility of a municipality to provide for infrastructure and citizen safety. These are priorities for my constituents as well. Infrastructure issues demand that the city continue to repair and replace old water and sewer lines, as well as repair and maintain city streets. To accomplish these goals on an ongoing basis, it will be necessary to address budgetary waste and the funding of non-essential projects. John Austin Stokes. The three primary areas of focus for any city council member should be public safety, infrastructure, and economic development. That being said, there is a contingent of citizens in Santa Rita who put neighborhood integrity at the top of their list, and I do not disagree. Too much commercialization of residential neighborhoods can water down what makes them so great in the first place. If elected councilman, I would want to make sure that all voices were being heard on any issue and would make decisions that were in the best interest of the district as a whole. Lynette Lucas. One of the top issues in our district is making sure our streets are maintained. Brian Neal Engel. The top issue for SMD 5, in my estimation, is rebuilding of the infrastructure. This includes repairing roads, water and sewage conduits, electrical grid upgrades, and the addition of new fiber optic communication internet mediums. Why do you want to serve on City Council? If elected, what will be your top three priorities? Karen Hesse Smith. My educational background and professional skill set lend themselves to addressing the city's issues. Infrastructure, water, streets, controlling taxes, scrutinizing current debt and unfunded liabilities, protection of neighborhood values. John Austin Stokes. I am a third-generation public servant who has spent my entire career serving West Texas and San Angelo. For the last 8 years, I have served as the executive director of the Concho Valley Council of Governments, CVOOG, managing a multi-million dollar budget and 300 employees. In that time, the thing I'm most proud of is the efficiencies we've achieved, which have been recognized at the state and federal level. We were able to do it in a way that enhanced the services we provide to residents of the Concho Valley. If elected, my top priorities would be to build coalitions for future economic development with our regional partners, like the Chamber and Angelo State, to ensure that ordinances are clear and that processes are consistent so that we may attract and retain businesses. And lastly, to look for efficiencies throughout the city budget process in order to ensure prudent usage of taxpayer dollars. Lynette Lucas. I would be honored to serve my district where we have lived for around 20 years. I would like to be a representative of the people to make sure our neighborhoods, family, and God-given freedoms are protected. My top priorities are making sure that our streets are maintained, our neighborhoods preserved, and our economy stays stable, and our small and local businesses have room for growth in these trying times. Brian Neil Engel. I want to add my varied military and scientific experience and education to the City Council as we start to expand the future possibilities for San Angelo and surrounding area. Clearly, the status quo cannot remain, but the future plans for San Angelo must be modified to promote stable growth benefiting all the population. My highest priorities are rebuilding and updating the infrastructure of the city and surrounding area where there are city interests, expanding employment opportunities by encouraging employers to expand their workforce, and encourage graduates to stay in the local area. And I also feel that the airport must be encouraged to expand both commercial and general aviation. The ability to enter the aerospace transport system easily makes San Angelo appealing to businesses, sales, and citizens alike. Why should residents of SMD5 vote for you instead of your opponents? Karen Hesse-Smith. I am the only candidate whose family have lived in the neighborhood continuously for five generations, who completed a 5 years master's program in architecture and urban design, has almost a decade and a half professional practice in city planning, was a regional director of a nationwide retailer responsible for 8 senior managers, 400 employees, and $80 million in annual earnings. The stakeholders of SMD5 deserve to have a voice that will advocate for them while being fiscally responsible. John Austin Stokes. We are blessed in SMD5 to have a very strong slate of candidates. I believe what sets me apart from my opponents is my record of change and influence at not only the Concho Valley Council of Governments, but also on boards I have served on, such as the United Way and West Texas Counseling and Guidance. I also, as someone who deals with government on a daily basis, am keenly aware of how slow change can take. Because of this, and if elected, I'm committed to serving as long as it takes to get the job done. In my opinion, that requires a commitment beyond Lane Carter's expiring term. Lynette Lucas. I am willing to serve and represent every resident of our district with no special interests except to listen to the people who pay taxes, work hard, and want to have good neighborhoods to live in. Brian Neil Engel. I have been a man under authority for most of my adult life, particularly during my 20-plus years in the United States Air Force as a commissioned officer. During my military career, I have managed multi-million dollar facilities, overseen the practice of more than 100 medical providers, and served in combat for one tour in Iraq. I have been involved in selecting and executing military air warfare plans. I have had the experience working for a small business owner and of owning my own medical practice, Angelo Retina Associates, in San Angelo. I have proven adaptability to new and complex situations and can excel in the most difficult environments. If you received a $1 million grant to use for San Angelo in any way you wanted, what would you do with it and why? Karen Hesse-Smith. I would apply it to infrastructure or pay down debt. Infrastructure is always the primary issue for any city. I believe we need someone who will help everyone see a bigger vision with an emphasis on fiscal responsibility. That is the difference between a manager and a strategic leader's perspective. John Austin Stokes. One of the unique things about my job is that we administer large grants through programs and projects all around the Concho Valley, like public transit, Head Start, and criminal justice. That being said, the things San Angelo needs most, like upgraded infrastructure and economic development, cost lots of money. Some of the current street projects underway are well in excess of $1 million. In other words, $1 million, while a lot of money, wouldn't go very far. Therefore, I'd likely advocate that we leverage the money as a local match to go after state and federal grants. We've had a lot of success at the CVOCG leveraging funding for projects, and it is truly the best way to get the most bang for your buck. I feel that the two areas of emphasis for economic development in our community should be the airport and downtown. Lynette Lucas. First of all, if we had $1 million grant, I would listen to feedback from the residents of our city, then look into what streets need to be maintained, or possibly making sure our water supply is safe. Brian Neil Engel. I would split the $1 million into three parts. One third would be used to augment the repairs and upgrades to infrastructure. One third would be used to promote business migration and establishment into San Angelo. And the last third would be used to promote training and trades through scholarships and grants and local approved training programs. What experiences or skills have prepared you to serve on City Council? Karen Hesse Smith. My education and background in both city planning and architectural development would give me a unique voice on the City Council. Over the course of more than a decade, I operated successfully in one of the most restrictive urban design environments in the United States. John Austin Stokes. I think two of the more impactful things I have done in my life are receiving my master's degree in public administration from Texas Tech and working for State Senator Robert Duncan. I was able to build a very strong foundation in fiscal management. Being from a small town, I had the deference to the expertise of authority. It wasn't until I was put into positions of authority that I realized I didn't know it all either. Working in the Senate was like getting a double PhD in psychology and policy. It wasn't enough to have a good handle on the policy. You had to be adept at understanding people's motivations, and those hard-taught skills are invaluable. Lynette Lucas. I am a wife, mom of four grown sons, have budgeted my home for 32 years. I homeschooled two sons, fostered 20-plus kids. I have worked some elections, gone to various meetings in our city, volunteered my time, paid taxes, taken over 1,000 hours of online classes at Hillsdale College, testified on, for, and against bills on my own time, and with my own money in our Texas Capitol. I have read the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, and the Federalist Papers. I understand policy and know how to budget. I am always learning. Brian Neil Engel. Probably my strongest asset is that during my medical training, I have learned how to educate myself, allowing me to act with knowledge outside my areas of expertise. This, coupled with the ability to quickly adapt to changing circumstances, has prepared me for service as the single-member District 5 City Councilman. What neighborhood of SMD 5 do you live in? What do you like about it? Is there anything you'd like to see improved? Karen Hesse Smith. I live in the heart of SMD 5. What's most important is that all the constituents of the district know that I will represent them in a manner that preserves and protects their neighborhood, no matter where they live. I pledge to give the neighborhoods in this district the same protections that are given to newer residential neighborhoods. I love the community feel of SMD 5. Children playing in the front yards, people casually walking, neighbors supporting each other, diverse economic housing, family-centric values, and a willingness to come together to improve our city. John Austin Stokes. I live in Santa Rita near Angelo State University in the Westmoreland edition. My favorite thing about my neighborhood is that my daughters and I are surrounded by truly great friends. My neighborhood is safe because it's patrolled regularly, is filled with young professionals and friendly people because it provides the same types of advantages for my peers, and yet is still within 10 minutes of where I work. I love living in a place that feels like a small town, but offers big city amenities. It's the best of both worlds, and it's definitely worth fighting to protect. Lynette Lucas. My family lives in the neighborhood by the original HEB. We have businesses on one side of us and a family neighborhood on the other side. I like the fact that I have good neighbors that look out for each other, and we have an access road that reduces traffic on our streets. We need to make sure our streets are maintained, crime stays low, and our family neighborhood stays intact. Brian Neil Engel. I live in the ASU College Hills neighborhood. I love the proximity to Angelo State University, a most beautiful campus. But as an alumnus, I might be biased. I have lived in larger cities. This adds to the appeal of San Angelo. Finally, I love the established neighborhood with its large trees, houses, with character, and close-knit occupants who have lived in this area their whole lives. As I have mentioned before, in mature neighborhoods, some of the water sewage, drainage, and roads have suffered over time and will need to be upgraded and repaired in the future. If elected, how do you plan to involve residents in the decision-making process of your district? Karen Hesse Smith. People deserve to be heard. I pledge to return all phone calls and emails in a timely manner. I foresee at least one constituent forum for in-person direct feedback on district and city issues. I would also like to host block parties, town halls, and digital surveys. I commit to balanced, fair representation for residents and business owners. While I represent a specific district, I will cast many votes that will impact the entire city. I welcome feedback from all residents of San Angelo. John Austin Stokes. One thing I have learned about myself through the COVID-19 pandemic is that nothing can replace human connection. I love keeping up with friends through social media and over the phone, but nothing replicates face-to-face interaction. If elected, I plan to schedule town hall-like formats so that people from the district are able to come and voice concerns. I also am aware that a lot of those conversations take place at the grocery store or over a cheeseburger or a cup of coffee. I am committed to being accessible. Lynette Lucas. I plan on getting the residents as involved as much as possible in the important decision-making process for our district. A well-informed and listened-to district is a good district. Brian Neil Engel. Several social media sites would be established for feedback and questions. I would like to see if suggestion mailouts could be provided on request. And finally, I would hope to be approachable by the members of my district during one-on-one discussions. As always, citizens can always address the full city council during scheduled council meeting every 2 weeks. Have you received donations or endorsements from any group or groups? If so, which groups? Karen Hesse Smith. No, I have not. John Austin Stokes. As of right now, I am being backed by friends and family in the neighborhood and the San Angelo firefighters. Because the race is so truncated, I look to expand on that base in the coming weeks. I've been incredibly touched by the support people have offered and am ready to work hard to earn more people's trust and votes. Lynette Lucas. The best endorsements are those of some of the individuals in my district and around the city. I've been endorsed by West Texas for Life. I am very thankful for all my volunteers. Brian Neil Engel. No donations to date. I have the support of several small business owners. Could you support a city council decision you did not vote in favor of? Why or why not? Karen Hesse Smith. Yes, our American system requires it. Once voted, something becomes law. It's the American way. John Austin Stokes. Ideally, any governing body should be made up of contradicting points of views and opinions. I am a firm believer that the best policies are developed through coalitions of different ideas that seek to strike a balance in the interest of everyone. Sometimes that means no solution is the correct solution. I fully anticipate that if I'm elected, I would not be in lockstep with every decision the council makes. However, because I respect the democratic process and the representativeness of the body, I would support the majority's decision. Lynette Lucas, I will work with the city council and have civil discussions. If the decision is not what is best for our district, I will stand strong for our District 5. Brian Neil Engel, it would depend on the issue at hand. It is said that a man should have a code to live by, some principles which cannot be violated. In those interests, I would not be very compromising. But in most things, if there is a majority benefit for the city, I would probably express my dissent, but would support the majority decision. Isn't that what democracy is all about? In June 2021, City Council approved a special use permit allowing a children's gymnasium to operate at Life Point Baptist Church in Santa Rita. Some SMD 5 residents felt the business was encroaching on their neighborhood. Others felt there was no harm in allowing the special use permit. How would you have voted on this issue had you been representing SMD 5 at that time? Karen Hesse Smith, based on my education, training, and experience, I am aware that it is improper land use planning to insert commercial businesses in residential neighborhoods. Also, this type of activity is unlawful, not only under Texas law, but under the law in many other states. To comply with proper land use planning and laws in the state of Texas, I would have been obligated to vote against it and in favor of affording SMD 5 the same protections of San Angelo's newer residential neighborhoods, like Bentwood, The Bluffs, and College Hills, which all prohibit commercial development. John Austin Stokes, I have talked to many different people in SMD 5 regarding the special use permit for Life Point. Suffice it to say, there are some very strong opinions on both sides of the issue. I have also researched staff recommendations and talked to members of the Planning Commission. My position on this issue, that it's been settled, and I would be remiss to come down strongly on either side without having access to all the information that that council had. I feel that the issuance of such permits and any other ordinances should not only be clear for the end user, but that the application of all rules should be consistent and fair. Lynette Lucas, there are details that the general public does not know about, including me. Of course, we want to listen to the residents and preserve our family neighborhoods. We also want to prevent future abuse of government overreach. The wording and specific details of the special permit is a very important part of the decision. Good positive programs for kids are important, and there are other areas that could be considered. Brian Neil Engel. After reading the referenced articles, driving the area of the gymnasium during the active time of the tumbleweeds, and talking to some of the residents of Santa Rita, I think I would have voted for the special use permit. Any business wanting to move into that neighborhood would have to apply for and be granted a permanent zoning variance. They would not be able to operate under the special use exemption, which is specific for the enterprise granted. I felt that Mr. Stribling of the City Planning Board should have recused himself or been directed to do so by the City Council. If the concerned citizens were allowed to buy the gymnasium, the property would have to be permanently rezoned to allow a multi-family structure to be permitted and built on that site. San Angelo residents gathered to honor life of Martin Luther King Jr. by John Tufts, published January 17th. Love is patient, love is kind, it does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud, it does not dishonor others. So began Pastor Keith Gosha's message to a crowd of about 50 people who gathered Monday, honoring the memory of Martin Luther King Jr. Love always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres, Gosha concluded in quoting biblical scripture, 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 4 through 8. He looked out into the audience seated in the pews at First United Methodist Church, 37 East Beauregard Avenue, and spoke about King's legacy for about 30 minutes. Love is at the core of change, Gosha said. If we really think about what Dr. King was doing, every step that he made it out of the love of changing the very people who hated him. While King's birthday is January 15, 1929, the third Monday in January is a federal holiday in observance of the slain civil rights leaders' contributions to fighting inequality. Gosha, pastor and founder of Living Word Church in San Angelo, was joined by other speakers, singers, and musicians Monday, January 17th, during the annual noon service by the Martin Luther King Jr. Association of San Angelo. The audience, composed of Black, White, and Hispanic San Angelo residents, prayed together, cheered together, listened to music together, and sang together during the hour-long service. It's so important not for us just to celebrate a day, Gosha said. If you truly want to celebrate a life and a legacy, do the necessary work that will cause the change in your community. San Angelo resident Dudra Butler is a member of the Martin Luther King Jr. Association and said King's legacy should be honored with action, not just words. As we celebrate him, I've been looking at Facebook and I see the quotes and the comments, but I hope people really understand what his message was about, Butler said. We have to continue the fight with voting rights, and we need all hands on deck. It was so important to King that we be able to cast our vote and have a say in the legislative process, she said. If you have a dream, do it. Coffee House opens in San Angelo, honoring late family member. By Rosanna Frere, published January 17th. A family from Mertzen and San Angelo, who opened a coffee shop this month honoring a late family member, hoped to leave an imprint on the community. Part owner of J.C. Coffee House, Shell Smith, said the shop at 3025 Southwest Boulevard was created to honor her father, Jack Charlton, who died last year in May. Smith runs the coffee shop with her husband, Scott, her daughter, Kendry Perez, son, Mason Clayton, and his wife, Addison Clayton. Smith said she was inspired to start the business after her father died. I had been reading and listening to lots of songs, and one quote I heard said, "If you have a dream, then do it. Don't take your dream with you," she said. The family talked about the idea of a business, and it had been Addison's dream to open a restaurant. "We wanted something family-based where people can come in and feel like part of our family," Addison said. "We're not trying to make millions or anything. This is more of us wanting to leave our imprint on San Angelo. So what better way to do that than with coffee? We will have anything from Americanos to cold brews to plain black coffee," Addison said. Addison said they are running on a limited menu until the J.C. Coffee House's grand opening on February 11th, where they hope to have a full menu. "If we can make it homemade, it'll be homemade," Addison said, who found her passion in culinary work. "We're going to have keto and low-carb alternatives since lots of people are wanting to eat healthy right now." Aside from pastries, J.C. Coffee House also will have breakfast sandwiches, specialty grilled cheese, chicken salad, Cobb salad, and more. "We are going to have significant sandwiches that San Angelo doesn't really see very often," Addison said. "We're going to have different kinds of things we will be known for. One of the sandwiches will be served with peanut butter and jelly, including bacon, bananas, and jalapenos, called the Big Jack. On Mondays, first responders will get a free coffee or half-priced specialty drink. Wednesdays will have the same discount for clergy, with Fridays for teachers." Smith said her family is very involved in the church, and they want people to come into their shop and feel welcomed. "We want to fill up their belly with our goodies, but also spiritually and mentally," Smith said. Right now, people are missing a lot of love, so we want them to feel that when they come in. JC Coffee House is open 6:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. Monday through Saturday, serving specialty coffees, pastries, and other foods. San Angelo man arrested after woman shot and police standoff, by Rosanna Frere, published January 17th. A San Angelo man has been arrested after a police standoff following the shooting of a woman Sunday night. At around 8:50 p.m. Sunday, January 16th, officers were dispatched to North Pope Street in reference to a shooting victim. Police found a 50-year-old woman who was suffering from a gunshot wound, according to a news release. The woman was taken to Shannon Medical Center and was listed in stable condition as of Monday morning, the release stated. SAPD's Criminal Investigations Division assisted with the investigation and learned the alleged shooter was in a travel trailer in the 700 block of Spalding Street. As police began setting up a perimeter, a man discharged a firearm from inside the trailer. A brief standoff followed, in which both a SWAT and crisis negotiation team arrived on scene, according to the news release. Police say the man was taken into custody and later transported to Shannon Medical Center for treatment of minor injuries. The investigation is ongoing at this time, according to the news release. Police later identified the man as Luis Herrera, 37. There is no danger to the public and no officers or civilians were injured during the course of this investigation, the release stated. Police said more information will be released as the investigation continues. Here's everything you need to know about the 2022 West Texas Tattoo Convention, by Rosanna Frere, published January 15th. Are you scared of needles? Then you need to avoid this event in San Angelo that leaves a mark. The 13th annual West Texas Tattoo Convention, hosted by Trufant Brothers Tattoo, brings tattoo artists and vendors from all over the world to Foster Communications Coliseum, 50 East 43rd Street. The convention will be held from February 25th through the 27th and is for people 18 and over. Times vary per day. Weekend passes are currently on sale for $41.50, and day passes can be purchased for $21.50 online at StubWire. According to the convention's Facebook, Oliver Peck will be headlining the event. Peck is well known as a judge of the TV show Ink Master for 13 seasons before parting with the show in early 2020. The convention's Instagram posts images of the participating artists' work with their names and pages tagged. If you are interested in a particular artist, you can send a direct message to them to see if they have openings at the event or if they take walk-ups. For more information, call 325-655-6500. BB gun causes nearly $2,000 in damages at San Angelo Elementary. One arrested a month later, by Elena Edgen, published January 14th. About 2 weeks after windows and doors at a San Angelo Elementary were shot at, one man has been arrested, according to an arrest affidavit obtained Friday. On December 29th, police arrived at Bradford Elementary, 2302 Bradford Street. They watched surveillance video of two people who walked around the school, in which one of them pulled out a BB or pellet gun, records state. The person shot at multiple glass panes in windows and doors, which caused $1,864 worth of damages, according to the affidavit. Officers found and spoke to one of the people in the video, who named a second person as the shooter, records state. Jake Lewis Aguirre, 20, was arrested Thursday, January 14th, on suspicion of criminal mischief between $750 and $30,000 in damage to a school building. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $7,500 bond as of 2:30 p.m. Friday, January 14th, according to online jail records. San Angelo's Casual Pint, Embracing New Year, New Me, with New Name and Menu, by Rosanna Frere, published January 15th. The New Year, New Me attitude has stretched to one downtown San Angelo pub, turning the Casual Pint into the Marshall Pint. The business, which originally opened in January 2017 at 19 East Concho Avenue, is in a three-phase project to mix the owner's passions, but still promises a good atmosphere. "My passion is martial arts, so it's a play on words with my last name," said Zach Marshall, owner. "It allows me to cross-brand my passions. I'm able to add to the ambiance, whether it's paint coupled with decor, it just furthers my aspirations." Marshall has been involved in martial arts his entire life and has been practicing Brazilian jiu-jitsu for the past 15 years. "I wanted to co-mingle the two," he said. "I love conversation, family, friends, beer, food, wine. I just get to add to that with the martial arts slant." The formal rebranding, phase one, was finalized on January 6th. What's new with the Marshall Pint? Along with the name change, people can expect a new look and menu with some fan favorites. Phase two includes permits for a kitchen expansion and a climate-controlled patio with shade, heating, and cooling. "Our menu will be even more robust and more complicated," Marshall said. "There will be a whole new ambiance change. We will have an outdoor grill, fireplaces, and so forth." Stage three will likely occur in 2023, according to Marshall. "We're going to add something big to our lineup," Marshall alluded, wanting to hold off on the announcement. The Marshall Pint will still host events, including trivia on Tuesday nights. "We always try to keep events going, always try to keep them kind of quirky," Marshall said. The Geeks Gaming Lounge has also been rebranded with new games, paint, and product lineup. Want to watch Super Bowl 56 but don't have cable? No problem. Here's where to stream it. By Jay Moreno, special to the San Angelo Standard Times, published January 13th. With more Americans continuing to lack cable due to high costs, it seems anyone can watch anything without cable in cheaper formats, even the country's biggest sporting event of the year. Cord cutting, defined as the act of canceling cable and satellite TV subscriptions in favor of subscribing to streaming services instead, has surged within the past few years. Many would rather pay for various long-time streaming services such as Netflix and Hulu, as well as newer streaming platforms such as HBO Max and Paramount Plus. Those who have access to cable can watch the Super Bowl 56 Sunday, February 13th on NBC. The annual championship game will be televised live from the SoFi Stadium in Inglewood, California, home to the Los Angeles Rams. If the number of COVID-19 cases and measures increase in the Los Angeles area, the game could potentially be moved to Arlington's AT&T Stadium, according to NBC Sports. As streaming continues to rise, the NBC Universal-owned streaming service, Peacock, will air the Super Bowl simultaneously alongside NBC. Since its 2020 launch, Peacock and NBC have shared and aired live programming, such as other NFL games, a recent New Year's special, the 2021 Summer Olympics, and its upcoming Winter Game ceremony. Popular streaming service Hulu, which has over 43 million subscribers and began offering their Hulu Plus live TV package in 2017, carries NBC. The service is already partially owned by NBC Universal, with episodes of present NBC shows available for streaming shortly after airing on live TV. Sling TV and Fubo TV also carry NBC, thus having access to watch the Super Bowl. Both streaming services offer various cable channels and are generally focused on those who are choosing to have more affordable cable access, with the latter being primarily targeted on sports programming. Furthermore, subscribers of YouTube TV can have access to NBC and 80-plus other networks. In addition to the game itself, the halftime show will consist of singer Mary J. Blige and rappers Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, Eminem, and Kendrick Lamar. The game's national anthem performer has not yet been announced. Concho Valley area schools are closing as COVID-19 cases soar. Here's what we know. By Elena Edgen, published January 14th. Canvasback ducks call Texas home during the winter. By Michael Price. Special to the San Angelo Standard-Times, published January 15th. I have oftentimes attempted to imagine what it would have been like to be an early 19th century explorer from Europe who had the opportunity to provide names to animals for the first time. Sometimes the common names of animals can be quite fitting. At other times, not so much. The common name of a migratory species of waterfowl that I will be writing about today falls into that latter category, maybe just because I have nary an artistic bone in my body. The canvasback is a migratory species that spends the summer breeding primarily in the western, midwestern states through western Canada into southeastern Alaska. During the colder winter months, it can be found sea to shining sea in the southern half of the United States, including throughout the entire great state of Texas. Nearly any body of water is utilized as habitat, although it generally prefers waters that are a minimum depth of 3 feet. As mentioned, the common name for the canvasback can be a bit confusing. Apparently, the early Europeans thought that the back of this large duck was canvas-like in appearance. Yes, the back can superficially resemble a blank canvas with its smoky gray, lightly mottled coloration in both sexes. Males and females also have black tails as well as long black bills, but males have a dark maroon-colored neck and head with a black breast, while the female has a more subtle rusty-colored neck, breast, and head. Both sexes also have a characteristic sloping profile, whereas other duck species have a more rounded slope on the front of the skull, like that of a roller coaster. The canvasback has more of a 45-degree slope to its skull. The canvasback's body size has been recorded to a length of 24 inches, while the wingspan is right at 3 feet. Males average nearly 3 pounds in weight, while females top out at around 2.5 pounds. These proportions make this species the largest of the 5 species of Ithaea that occur in Texas. This species of waterfowl is known as a diving duck, which means that rather than just submerge its head and forebody underwater to retrieve food, it dives and swims along the bottom of the waterway to feed. Being an omnivorous species, crustaceans make up approximately 80% of its diet during the breeding season, while during migration and winter, aquatic plants and crustaceans are fed upon at equal proportions. Unlike other members of this genus, this species only dives down to a maximum of 7 feet below the surface to forage. Other members can dive as deep as 40 feet. This variety of aquatic bird prefers to live in small colonies, although during the breeding season, it chooses to nest solitarily. This nest is constructed exclusively by the female and is generally built along marshy areas in strands of vegetation, although occasional nests are built on dry land. Canvasbacks are a monogamous species that breeds during the summer months and lays between 7 and 12 2.5-inch long grayish or greenish eggs that are incubated by the female. This incubation period is generally just under a month, after which time the almost self-reliant young will leave the nest. They can feed themselves, but are protected by the mother. Hatchlings begin to take flight as early as 2 months of age. This species typically only produces one brood annually. Studies have shown that the population dynamics of this species have stabilized over the past two decades. It can be quite abundant in many areas. The main concern for the conservation of this species is the loss of nesting habitat. Michael Price is owner of Wild About Texas, an educational company that specializes in venomous animal safety training, environmental consultation, and ecotourism. Contact him at wildabouttexas@gmail.com. And now here's this week's column from Allison Watkins. Tips for winter trimming of West Texas plants. Published January 15th. The first hard freeze of winter was much later than average this year, but it finally hit and killed perennial tops. February will be here before you know it, and it's a good time of year to cut back freeze-damaged perennials as well as give a haircut to other landscape plants to keep them growing vigorous and to stay dense and attractive. For example, spreading mounding plants like rosemary, artemisia, and setolina tend to grow out away from their original planting pot, leaving a bare, unsightly section in the center. Cutting them back significantly this time of year helps the plant stay more compact and beautiful. Semi-evergreen plants like salvia greggii and roses benefit from a trim in late winter to help with strong spring growth and to keep them tidy and healthy looking. Cut them back about 25% to 50%, depending on how healthy their existing stems are. The more stressed and unsightly they are, the more you should cut back. Old shrubs that are overgrown and not as attractive as they used to be can be rejuvenated with a gradual renewing pruning. Remove a third of the oldest, tallest branches. Cut them back almost to the ground right now before new growth starts. This will stimulate fresh new growth, and the process can be repeated each year until the shrub is back into the desired condition. Evergreen ground covers can also benefit from a winter trimming. It will help them stay thick as well as neat and tidy. Asian jasmine is a popular and common ground cover for good reason. It's a nice size and texture, is fairly easy to grow, can handle shade, and doesn't need tons of water. A severe trim, as low as 6 inches, can help it grow back denser and thicker in the spring, but will cause it to look ugly for a while. A hedge trimmer is best, and a string trimmer can work, but is more uneven and can accidentally dig up runners. Mondo grass can be mowed once a year with the mower at the highest setting, no lower than 4 inches, to keep it looking dense and healthy. It also will look rough until spring growth fills it back in. Neither Mondo grass or Asian jasmine need any trimming to keep a more informal natural look, but if they are damaged and need to be rejuvenated, or if a formal look is preferred, trimming now can help achieve that. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.